This is Audible.
Whole Story Quest Audio presents an unabridged recording of Raising a Gangster by Kerry Barnes, narrated by Annie Aldington. Part 1. Chapter 1. South London, 1958. It was pitch black outside by the time Peggy Reardon sat down with her cup of tea. A draught blew in through the small cracks in the window of the main room. She shuddered and stared into nothing. There was no point in feeling any self-pity. Besides, no doubt most of the neighbours in the street were all in the same predicament, piss poor and living in a run-down row of two-up, two-down terraced houses. Bleak was the best way to describe it. She sighed to herself. At least she had her boys and her health. She peered down at her threadbare carpet slippers and wondered why on earth they were called carpet slippers. She didn't have any carpet, not even fancy lino, just clean floorboards and a bit of an old rug. She shook her head at the last of the coal glowing in the grate. Then her eyes scanned the empty mantelpiece. It once showed off a few bits of china passed down by her mother, Annie. But now the shelf was empty. Not that she'd been very close to her mother, for no other reason than they'd not been alike at all. Annie was quiet, sickly, and hard work at times, always taking to her bed. However, she'd been very close to her father, Dylan, and having to sell his pocket watch had hurt her so much. Even now the thought made her feel as though her insides were ripped in half. She and her husband had sold everything of any value down at Camden Market before Reginald left and headed back to Ireland. She'd hung on to his promise that he would find work and come back for her and the kids. But then the weeks had grown into months, with not even a letter from him. Many local men had found it hard when the docks closed. Until the 1920s, Bermondsey had thrived. The docks secured enough work for the families to scrape by, but now everything had gone, along with the odd little treat, a bottle of Mother's Ruin or a packet of tobacco. Really, she knew in her heart that Reginald hadn't gone back to Ireland to find work. He'd buggered off to escape their life of poverty so he could start afresh elsewhere. She couldn't, though. Now aged 28, she'd been left with his debts and two kiddies to bring up. She sighed heavily again. What was she going to do now? The old codger at Hartley's jam factory had fired her. The dirty old bastard had thought he could get his way. He assumed she needed her job enough to let him cop a feel. He was right, in so much as she needed that job, but she valued her pride more. He wouldn't have behaved in that way if her Reginald was about. Fiery he may have been, but a sniff that old Millard had pinched her arse and there would have been murders. She sipped her tea and blinked back the tears before getting up from the chair to stoke the remnants of the fire. The mirror on the wall was more for show, the last of her mother's possessions. But she rarely looked at herself. After all, what was the point? It didn't matter what she looked like. She had no husband or fella to smile her way. The heat from the fire was minimal, and Peggy knew she had to hurry to bed before the house cooled to a bitter cold. As she climbed the creaky steep stairs, she heard a gentle banging at the back door. Initially, she thought it was the wind blowing up. As she paused, she heard it again and instantly hurried back down and peered through the small window into the yard. Grinning like two Cheshire cats were her boys. Turning the key, she pulled the door open and ushered them in.
What in the name of God are you two doing out? Jesus Christ, I thought you were in bed. And look at the state of you.
Her eldest son of eight proudly pulled a Hessian sack from behind his back and grinned. She took it from him and peered inside.
Bloody hell, Cyril. You can't be taking coal from our neighbours. Old Mrs. Peabody's sick, and Mr. Bates next door's on his deathbed. No, Mum, we didn't, did we, Howie?
Peggy looked from her eldest with his lively grey eyes and confident grin to her youngest son, who always had a permanent smile and red flushed cheeks. Howie shook his head but said nothing. He invariably waited for Cyril to do the talking. Cyril was only a year older, but already he had the mind of a teenager.
So where's it come from, then?
The jam factory. We snuck around the back and there was a bloody great mountain of the stuff.
Oi, Cyril, Watch your language.
Sorry, but there's so much coal all piled high and no one was there.
Mum, empty the sack and I'll go back and get more. They don't need all that, do they?
Howie handed her his sack and flashed his big blue eyes.
No, it's late. It's dark and it's dangerous out there. This is a treat and it'll do us just fine. Although looking at the colour of you two, it'll take all the coal to eat the water to scrub the black off your faces.
Mum, I won't get caught. And what's the worst anyone can do, eh? Don't worry about me, Mum.
He looked at Howie and grinned.
We won't be seen. The factory ain't got any lights on. Honestly, Mum.
Peggy chewed her lip.
Go on, then. But if anyone comes, you drop the sack and run, all right?
Me and Howie are going to use the barret and fill a big bag.
She nodded.
Now listen. If a Bobby sees you leave the barret and Scarpa, right? You don't want to get a name for yourself with the establishment.
Cyril smiled.
Yeah, of course, Mum.
Before Peggy could give any more words of advice, Cyril and Howie were out of the door. As an almighty gust of cold wind blew in, she shivered, and an unexpected tear trickled down her face. Quickly, she wiped it away. This was no life. Her two little boys, feeling the need to scour the streets to steal coal to keep the house warm, didn't sit at all comfortably with her. But it was a case of needs must.
Reginald Reardon, what have you done to us? She said aloud.
It was all wrong. She should have enough money to put more than bread and jam on the table and still have at least a few pennies left for the coalman. However, when Reginald had left that day to go in search of work, she hadn't a clue he'd not been paying the rent, or the coalman, or the butcher. In fact, wherever she went, there were hands palm up asking for money owed. She closed the door, sat back down at the small table, and gazed around the room. Old crochet blankets covered the sofa to hide the ripped seats. The two steps that led down to the small kitchen were rotten and no doubt would soon collapse. And in her feeble attempt to cover the windows, she'd ended up having to dye Hessian sacks and tie a pretty blue ribbon to soften the look. But they were still an eyesore and didn't add any relief to the sight of the walls blackened by soot. And now, with no work, how was she even going to get through the next few weeks?
Damn you, Reginald, she hollered again. Why did you have to alienate everyone?
Everyone was in the same situation, and they would help anyone if they could. But he'd upset nearly every neighbour with his harsh tongue and lack of empathy. And now here she was, left all alone. But her pride, personality and temperament meant that she didn't have the guts to ask anyone for help, all too afraid they would shut the door in her face. Her eyes fell to a pair of shoes by the fireplace. Cyril had tied the laces in many knots and worn the soles so much she could see the floorboards beneath. A tight feeling gripped her throat. He hadn't mentioned that his school shoes had bloody great holes in them. She cried another tear. It was all wrong. A thought came to her. Reginald had left an old pair of shoes under the bed. She could cut the leather and place it inside Cyril's shoes until she could afford a new pair. Eagerly, she got to work, using the old bread knife to cut the soles small enough to fit inside her son's shoes. Every few minutes, she peered through the window, hoping to see her lads walking up the path. Whatever was she thinking, letting them go off to steal coal? Still, what kind of life was this anyway? If her boys were to grow up on the wrong side of the law, whose fault was it but that bloody government? They did sod all to help people like us, she thought. Peggy's real name was Margaret. She was born in Bermondsey, but moved to Ireland when her father went on the run for a reason she didn't know. Luckily for the family, he was originally from Kilkenny and had relatives there, and so right away they offered him the cottage owned by his uncle. She was 16 then and loved the countryside, but when she married Reginald, they moved back to Bermondsey. She sighed again when she looked out of the window and down the dark and empty path. If only she had the money to return to Ireland. However, that was such wishful thinking on her part. There was no family left to return to, and she was sure her husband had either died or had hooked up with a tart. He always did have a wandering eye. It was just a shame that she hadn't realised that fact until she was married and heavily pregnant with her first son, but despite everything, she still loved the bastard. Anxiously awaiting her sons, she was relieved when she heard the heavy wheels of the barrow. Jumping to her feet, she opened the door to find Cyril pushing the barrow with Howie asleep on the front and the mound of coal on the back. She wondered how on earth her little son had pushed it all the way back from the factory. She hurried towards him and took the handles, while Cyril leaned over and rested his hands on his knees, taking deep breaths.
Howie was tired, Mum, or I would have loaded more coal. Get yourself inside and get warmed up. Here.
She threw him a lump of coal.
Stick that on the fire.
As soon as she'd stationed the barrow by the coal shed, she scooped Howie in her arms and carried him inside. His cheeks were ice cold against her neck.
Cor, it's bleeding taters out there, Mum, said Cyril, still out of breath.
Laying Howie on the sofa, she then covered him in a blanket. When she turned to face Cyril, she saw him rubbing his cold hands in front of the fire.
I'm going to make you a hot drink and get you thawed out.
She hurried into the small kitchen area, put the kettle on the stove and used her own cup to make her son a cup of tea. As soon as the kettle boiled and she'd made the tea, she returned to the main room. Cyril was curled up beside his brother and purring like a kitten. Another tear made its way down her cheeks. Feeding the fire with more coal, she sat in the chair, rested her head on the table, and fell into a nightmare-like sleep. Peggy woke up before the boys, who were having a lie-in because the school was closed for the day. Gingerly, she stood up from the chair and stretched her aching back. The howling wind had died down, but the room was getting chilly. Creeping out through the back door, she shivered and hurried towards the coal shed. It had been so dark last night when the boys had returned that she didn't quite see how much coal they'd brought back with them. The generous mound on the barrow made her smile, but the clouds were heavy with rain. She could feel it in her bones. Out of necessity, she needed to shovel the coal from the barrow to inside the shed before it got drenched, before any neighbours peered over the wall and saw it there. Using the handleless shovel, she scooped the coal and lobbed it inside the shed. Once she'd finished, she stretched her back again, scooped some more into the old scuttle and dashed back inside. The house was warm and cosy by the time the boys woke up. Peggy had filled the tin trough with hot water and unwrapped a bar of carbolic soap, ready to give her black-faced boys a good soaking. Normally, she would have waited until Sunday night, but they needed one now. As she made herself a cup of tea before waking the kids, she could hear the coughing coming from next door. Mr. Bates coughed night and day, but this morning the sound was so different, less violent and more like a wheeze. Feeling the heat from the fire envelop her, even in the damp kitchen, she wondered if the poor old sod had enough strength to keep his own house warm. She didn't like the sound of his cough or the apparent lack of movement. She could always hear the man go up and down the stairs, but lately the house was quiet except for the coughing. She had it from both sides, Mrs. Peabody, the stroppy woman, and him, both coughing their guts up. Cyril stirred and sat upright.
Cor, you'd half fall asleep down here, Mum. Oh, it's lovely and warm, eh?
Yeah. Now, son, once your brother gets up, I want both of you in that bath and scrubbed clean. Do you hear?
Yeah. Where you going, Mum?
I'm going to check on Mr. Bates.
Cyril rubbed his eyes and yawned.
Ain't he dead yet?
Cyril?
Sorry, Mum. I just thought he would be dead by now. He's been dying for a year.
Yeah, well, he ain't dead yet, the poor old fella.
Closing the door behind her, she trotted down the small path through the gate and into Mr. Bates's yard. She sighed at the overgrown patch of garden that had once been quite a colourful sight before moody Mr. Bates got sick. She tapped on the back door and waited. He didn't call out, though, and that was odd. He always called out. Gingerly, she turned the back door handle, opened the door and called out again, but there was no response other than the sound of heavy wheezing. Hesitating before going in, Peggy felt as if she was doing something wrong. Mr. Bates had never opened his door to invite anyone in, not that she knew of. She told herself she was going inside for a good reason, but as soon as she stepped over the threshold, she was taken aback. His kitchen, although untidy, was full of pots and pans, plates, which were piled high on the shelf, a beautiful china teapot, and even ornaments. As she ventured into what they called the main room, She was surprised again. A large rug almost covered the floorboards and a green three-piece suite dominated the room. A small table and two chairs made of mahogany were placed in the same position as her own, under the small window. Beside the fireplace was a brass scuttle, and on the shelf above the fireplace there were more china ornaments and a large mirror. She wondered what it was like in what she called the Christmas room. It was a small room at the front, a room that most of the streets saved as their best, which they kept immaculate for use only at Christmas and on birthdays. When she'd first moved into a home with Reggie, it had their ornaments, photos, and a polished table kept for best. However, since then, she'd had to sell off all of her knick-knacks, as well as her most precious valuables. She paused when Mr. Bates coughed.
Mr. Bates? It's Peggy from next door, love.
She couldn't make out the words through the heavy groaning, so she decided just to climb the stairs. If he told her off, then so be it. A nasty smell made her cold nose tingle as soon as she reached the small landing. The smell and the wheezing were coming from the room to the left.
Mr. Bates, it's me, she said,
as she stopped dead in the doorway to his room. Mr. Bates was lying in his bed, covered with blankets and propped up with three puffed-up pillows. His face was a gaunt and sickly grey colour.
Holy Mary, Mother of God!
Mr. Bates's sunken eyes flicked her way.
What do you want?
Oh, Mr. Bates, I want nothing, love. I heard you through the wall. It's bleeding freezing in here. Let me help you. You sound dreadful.
Mr. Bates coughed again and took three deep breaths before he looked back at Peggy.
I'm fine. Leave me to die in peace and don't you go snooping about. This is my home, woman.
I'll not go snooping. Let me make you a cup of tea and get the fire going. You ain't well.
Didn't you hear me? I want to be left to die in peace.
The annoyance had somehow brought some life and spirit back into the man.
Yeah, and you can die in peace, Mr. Bates, but not in the bloody cold. Now then, I'll make the fire up and...
She gawped at the stinking chamber pot.
I'm going to see if I can't get you cleaned up, warm and more comfortable. I think I've got some medicine back indoors.
Mr. Bates sighed heavily.
Bloody women.
Peggy smiled.
Yep, we're a right pain in the arse, ain't we?
Picking up the chamber pot, Peggy took careful steps not to spill it while tilting her face to the side to avoid breathing in the stench. Once she'd disposed of the contents down the outside toilet, she opened the door to the coal shed. To her surprise, it was empty. But then, if the man couldn't get down the stairs, he couldn't pay the coalman to deliver more coal. She tutted and returned to her house to fetch her scuttle. Cyril and Howie were both in the bath.
Oh, good lads. And make sure you scrub behind your ears. I don't want any black fingernails neither. Is he dead yet? Cyril? No, he's not. He's very poorly, and I'm going to heat up his house and make him a cuppa. Now then, where did I put that cough mixture?
In the cupboard above the mangle.
You don't miss a trick, do you, son?
Cyril grinned, and his wet, shiny cheeks glowed. As soon as Peggy returned to Mr. Bates, she got to work making up the fire. The council and the welfare department had scheduled the terraced houses to be demolished, and the families were soon to be moved into the newer generation homes. For some, it was a blessing, but for others, it was heartbreaking. The new tower blocks were going up all around them, and the council were moving the families into the flats. The older residents loved the houses and their way of life, regardless of the fact that they were not fit for purpose and a health hazard, particularly to their lungs. The smoke and damp played havoc, and even in the depths of winter you would see neighbours outside breathing in the fresher air. Peggy would have loved to have been offered one of the brand spanking new flats. She felt ostracised from the community, all because of her husband's mean-spirited attitude. She realised that perhaps she was overthinking this, because it played on her mind a lot. But after all the trouble he'd caused her, she felt so thoroughly ashamed as his wife. However, with all the rent she now owed, the council had placed her at the bottom of the list, and so she would need a good few quid before they would offer her a new home. Some families had jumped the queue, of course, because their kids had either come down with measles, whooping cough, or in some cases, diphtheria. But the authorities had deemed her lads fit and well after being seen by the school nurse and the doctor. So her family was stuck where they were, and Peggy could only hope and pray that one day she would live in the sky, looking out over the shitholes of London. The fire roared up the chimney, and Peggy added more coal. She stood back and rubbed her hands together. It wouldn't be long before the heat emanating from the chimney warmed the two bedrooms upstairs. After putting the kettle on, she checked in the tea caddy. There, almost full to the brim, were tea leaves. A thought occurred to her. If Mr. Bates couldn't make it downstairs to pay the coalman, he wouldn't be able to pay the milkman either. But as she looked around the kitchen, she noticed a fridge. "Blimey," she said aloud. Gripping the big silver handle, she pulled the door open. She'd never seen a fridge. Well, not in a house. Only in the factory had she seen one. There on the shelves were three bottles of milk, a slab of butter, and wrapped in paper were a good couple of pounds of sausages. Using one of the china cups, she made Mr. Bates a cup of tea. Carefully balancing the cup on its saucer in one hand and holding the bottle of medicine and a spoon in the other, she climbed the stairs.
"Here you go, Mr. Bates. I've brought you a nice cup of tea to wash down this cough mixture. Now then, sit yourself up if you can."
Mr. Bates was in his late 50s, but looked more like 80. His thinning, straggly hair stuck up in all directions, and his eyes glared suspiciously at her. She placed the contents in her hands on the bedside table and helped him to sit up. He didn't stop her.
"Here, take this," she said, as she poured the thick, dark liquid onto a spoon.
He did as he was told. Swallowing the mixture, he gratefully took the cup of tea.
"I've got the fire going, and I'll fetch you your chamber pot. Did you fancy a bit of bread and butter?"
"No," he said, staring coldly at her. "How did you start the fire?"
"I had some spare coal. Anyway, you drink your tea and I'll come back in an hour or so. I'll make you another one and top up that fire. What do you say?"
Mr. Bates nodded.
"Yeah, but don't you go snooping around or touching my stuff."
"I've no intentions, Mr. Bates, of doing any such thing. So now, don't you go worrying. You just get warm and enjoy your cuppa."
"I'm dying, you know."
"Well, if you are, at least you'll be warm."
Cyril was sitting next to his brother, huddled around the fire when Peggy returned. She noticed the red mark across his shoulder. As she moved closer, she realised the red graze was from carrying the Hessian sack. This was no life, she thought.
"Fancy a nice hot cup of milk?"
Howie beamed and nodded, but Cyril just looked up sadly.
"I'll just have tea, Mum. Save the milk."
She thought about the bottles of milk inside Mr. Bates's fridge, but instantly she shook the bad thought from her mind.
"There's enough, love."
Cyril appeared troubled.
"Mum, do you think Dad will ever come back? And if he don't, how are we going to live?"
Peggy looked into her son's eyes and saw wisdom.
"Now then, don't you go worrying about all that kind of stuff. That's not for you to concern yourself with. I'm going to make some nice warm milk and no more talk of your father. 'Cause, son, I have not an iota when or even if the man will come back. Anyway, we're doing all right, ain't we?"
Cyril nodded and looked back at the dancing flames. As soon as the sun was higher in the sky, Cyril and Howie went out to play, leaving Peggy dusting and sweeping. Once she'd finished with her own housework, she decided to return to Mr. Bates. Politely, she called up the stairs to let him know she was there before making him another cup of tea. She loved his kitchen. However, it was a stark reminder that she was penniless in comparison. Mr. Bates was looking a little better than earlier that morning.
"How are you doing? Did that linctus help?"
"Is that tea for me?"
She smiled and handed him the cup.
"I noticed that you've got some sausages in the fridge."
"You want them, I suppose?"
Peggy jerked her head in surprise.
"No, Mr. Bates. I was going to cook them for you. You know, to get your strength up."
Mr. Bates sighed.
"Yeah, yeah, cook them all. They'll no doubt turn bad in a few days. Give your skinny little boy some to fatten them up."
"Oh, really, Mr. Bates? Are you sure? I mean, that's very, very kind of you."
He sighed again.
"Call it payment for the cough medicine and the coal."
Peggy smiled.
That's nothing, Mr. Bates.
More than anyone else would have done.
You look better. Now then, not that I was nosing around.
She paused when she noticed his raised eyebrow.
But your lovely kitchen could do with a clean. Shall I?
If you must. But what do you want in return?
He tutted when he saw the disappointed look in her eyes.
Sorry. Not used to people wanting to help me. I've pissed everyone off over the years.
Never mind that. I'll give the kitchen a good clean, then cook you some lunch. The truth is, Mr. Bates, I've done my own housework and I'm not used to being idle.
Unexpectedly, Peggy found herself telling him the story of how the manager at the jam factory had fired her and how her husband had left her and her children. Before she knew it, she was telling him her whole life story. The expression on Mr. Bates' face changed. His hard, sallow features seemed to lift, to be replaced by rosy cheeks, and there was even a hint of a compassionate smile now. Once she'd given his kitchen a good clean, she retrieved the sausages from the fridge and returned home. The amount of meat stuffed in the skins made Peggy's mouth water. Filling the pot with onions, carrots and stock, she gently fried the sausages and lowered them into the stew. The aroma enveloped the kitchen and had Peggy wishing the stew was ready to eat. To make the meal go even further, she rolled some dumplings and popped them on the stove to steam. Pleased with her efforts, she filled a basin with warm water, washed her face and tied her hair back into a bun. Looking at her reflection, she sighed. One day she would have the money to have one of those modern cuts and to be able to buy hair lacquer to hold her hair in place.
If I ever get lucky, she thought, I'll buy myself a stick of lipstick.
After stoking up the fire and laying the table, Peggy called out from the back door for her boys to come in and get cleaned up ready for dinner. Cyril and Howie had hovered around the yard, tantalised by the cooking smells drifting from the house, and as soon as their mother called them, they were inside in a flash. Peggy had poured a generous helping into Mr. Bates's large bowl, and with a tea towel resting over the top, she left her boys to eat their food while she carried the weighty dish next door. Politely, she called up the stairs to say she was coming up, just in case he was in the middle of filling the chamber pot. To her surprise, he sounded more upbeat and replied, "Come up." Carefully, she climbed the steep staircase and entered his bedroom.
"Cor, blimey, Mr. Bates, you look a whole lot better."
"Yeah, I guess I feel it," he replied, pushing himself into an upright position.
"I hope it's all right. I've never been a good cook, but I've tried me best. Now then, you eat that and I'll be back to wash up."
Mr. Bates took the bowl and stared at the steaming stew.
"Smells all right to me."
Peggy smiled and was about to walk away.
"Don't worry about washing up and, thank you."
She smiled again and left. Cyril and Howie had devoured their stew in the short time she'd been gone and were now wiping the sides of their bowls with a slice of bread. Cyril looked up.
"Where's yours, Mum?"
"Now don't you go worrying about me. I'll have mine later. Get yourselves ready for bed."
As soon as they headed upstairs, Peggy cleaned one of their bowls and poured herself a small amount to satisfy her own hunger, careful to leave enough for tomorrow's dinner. She sat down and began to read a book, while listening to her boys giggling, and almost fell asleep as soon as their chattering stopped. By this time, she was ready for bed. A few embers remained, which glowed in the darkness, and she shivered as she entered her sparse bedroom. Most of the blankets were on the boys' double bed, so she put on a jumper and a long pair of socks and climbed under the threadbare sheets. It wasn't long before she was sound asleep. Cyril lay awake worrying. His brother's soft purring told him that Howie was in a deep sleep. Quietly, he clambered from his bed, got dressed and carried his shoes in his hands as he crept downstairs through the main room and out of the back door. It was pitch black, but Cyril wasn't afraid of the dark. He wasn't afraid of anything, except his mum running off like his father had. He would have to find a way to put food on the table. The jam factory was his first port of call. After he'd nicked the coal the other night, he'd also clocked the back of the factory's loading bay, where lorry drivers pulled up and opened their back doors for the goods to be unloaded. He thought he might help himself at least to a bag of sugar from the Tate and Lyle lorry, However, as soon as he reached the factory, he noticed that the men had locked up the bay. He sat on the protruding low wall and waited in hope. After a couple of hours of getting colder and colder, he got up and rubbed his frozen backside. He felt useless and tired, and so he headed back home. However, as soon as he turned the corner, he spotted a truck parked outside the pub. The double cellar doors that led down from the pavement were open, and the driver was carrying barrels of beer on his shoulder down the steps. The light shone up against the dark backdrop, and Cyril decided to take a closer look. Making sure he kept in the shadows, he crept his way towards the truck and spied a crate of whiskey. His heart beat faster. No one was there. The driver and the landlord were busy down in the cellar. Without thinking, he snatched two bottles and scarpered along the main road. Just when he thought he'd got away with it, he heard a deep, loud voice.
Oi, you! Stop! I know who you are, you little shit!
Cyril didn't look back. He ran as fast as he could in the cold air, which bit his face and burned his lungs. Turning sharp right, he could hear footsteps behind him, but nothing would stop him now. On he ran until he was in the alley that led to all the small gardens, or yards as they were rightly called, including his own. But as the voice called out again, he decided not to go to his home, but instead enter Mr. Bates's place. Not wasting time by opening the gate, he hurdled it and ran to Mr. Bates's back door, praying it wasn't locked. He only hoped that the man shouting after him didn't see him go into Mr. Bates's yard, or he would be well and truly done for. Placing one bottle under his left arm and holding the other in his left hand, he turned the doorknob and, luckily, it opened. In a panic, he closed the door behind him and sat down on the kitchen floor away from the window. Trying not to make a noise as he gasped for breath, he pulled his knees up to his chin and hugged himself. A million thoughts ran through his mind. If that man really knew who he was, he would bang at his house and get his mother out of bed. And if he got caught, his mother would be livid, ashamed, and worse, sad. But then his heart rate skyrocketed. Someone banged loudly at the back door.
Oh, Christ,
he mumbled under his breath. But he was cut short because from nowhere, Mr. Bates appeared in the kitchen. Cyril looked up with wide eyes, but was astonished when Mr. Bates, dressed in a suit, totally ignored him and ripped the door open.
What the bloody hell are you doing banging at my back door this early in the morning? Sorry, sir, but a young lad has just pinched two bottles of whiskey and, well, I thought I know you, and I know your father. No one is in my house except me. Now, a word of warning. Don't you ever knock at my bloody back door again.
Sorry, I didn't recognise you, Mr. Bates. Sorry again.
Good. Now fuck off.
Cyril was totally shocked. He'd never heard Mr. Bates speak like that before. It was pretty scary. The way he spoke so slowly with such command was alien to him. Holding his breath, he waited for Mr. Bates to shut the door and hoped that he genuinely hadn't seen him. He could then sneak back out and no one would be any the wiser. But he was in for another surprise when Mr. Bates peered down.
Get up, boy, and follow me.
With the bottles hidden behind his back, Cyril stood up unsteadily. He watched Mr. Bates take strong strides up the two steps and into the main room, where he turned the light on and sat in the chair beside the fire. Cyril felt awkward, but intrigued.
So, lad, you've got a bottle of whiskey, I see.
Cyril clutched both bottles tightly behind his back.
No use hiding them, lad.
He held out his hand to take one.
I've got two, said Cyril.
Nah, lad, you've got one, because one is now mine.
Cyril had only ever thought of Mr. Bates as an old man who liked gardening and who was now confined to his bed dying. He smirked.
I tell you what, you can have one for 10 shillings. How about that?
Oh, is that right? And what do I get for not handing you over?
Cyril beamed more through relief at Mr. Bates's softer tone.
You get 3 shillings knocked off.
Take a seat, boy. You strike a hard bargain.
So, do you want to buy two then?
Asked Cyril, before he sat on the footstool brandishing the two large bottles with pride.
Call it 17 shillings for the pair.
Mr. Bates leaned back and steepled his hands, flicking his front tooth with his forefingers.
Supply and demand,
That's what the game's all about.
Cyril frowned.
What do you mean?
You pinched two bottles of scotch just because they were there. But tell me this. What were you doing out there when you should rightly be in bed?
I couldn't sleep.
Mr. Bates laughed.
Right you are. So you didn't plan anything then? You just thought, I'll have a nose around, see what I can nick?
Cyril swallowed hard. He could see where this was heading.
I'd best be going home.
He placed the two bottles on the side.
You can pay me later.
Okay, lad. But listen to me. There's no point in nicking stuff that you can't sell. As I just said, it's called supply and demand.
Cyril stopped in his tracks and glanced back at the old man, who somehow didn't look so old now.
Look, I'm not a thief as such. I just want you to help me mum. Me dad's buggered off, and I have to be the man of the house. I only want you to earn a few, Bob.
Mr. Bates laughed louder.
Man of the house, eh? He lowered his voice. Well, lad, your heart's in the right place, and you've got some bottle. I'll give you that and all. I'll tell you what, I'll give you 30 shillings. But I want you to do me a favour.
Cyril chewed his bottom lip and looked Mr. Bates up and down.
What's the favour?
Go to McNally, the butcher, and bring me back some meat.
Cyril nodded.
Yeah, sure. Give me a list and the money, and I'll go in a couple of hours.
He yawned.
I'm tired.
Without waiting for the list, he waved goodbye and left through the back door. Chapter 2. Cyril woke up to find his brother already downstairs. He was about to turn over and catch some more shut-eye, but then he remembered the deal he had with Mr. Bates. As he climbed out of bed, he realised that he must have been dog-tired because he was still in his clothes from the night before. As his bare feet touched the wooden floor, he was pleasantly surprised. It was warm. In fact, the upstairs was toasty. Peggy was buttering a wedge of bread when Cyril appeared.
Not like you to lie in for so long?
She raised a questioning brow. Cyril rubbed his face and scratched his head.
It's lovely and warm, Mum,
he replied, ignoring her comment.
Yeah, well, it's snowing, and I thought I'd best get this place warm if you two monkeys are going to play outside today. No use in coming inside to a cold house. Now then, here's some bread and a cup of tea. I'm popping next door to make sure Mr. Bates is okay. If you're going out, you wrap up warm. I can't have you two going down with pneumonia.
Cyril thought about Mr. Bates and his promise.
I'll go next door, Mum. You stay in the warm.
Oh, I don't know, son. He may not like it.
Honestly, Mum, he will be all right. Besides, he can only ask me to leave.
Peggy looked at the blazing fire and sat down on the sofa.
All right, love. You ask him if he wants a cup of tea and if there's anything he needs, anything at all. Tell him I'll be around this afternoon. Oh, and can you take some coal and get his fire going?
Cyril was nodding while he pulled his shoes on. In a flash, he was out of the door before his mother changed her mind. He knocked first before he opened Mr. Bates's back door and was surprised to hear him call out.
Come in.
The main room was already warm and the fire was roaring up the chimney.
Mum says I'm to make you a cup of tea and...
He looked at the fire.
And make up the fire, but you've got that going yourself.
Mr. Bates smiled and his eyes softened.
You remembered our deal?
Cyril nodded.
Yeah, of course. Have you got the list and the money?
Mr. Bates pulled a folded piece of paper from the inside pocket of his suit.
Just give him this and wait for the meat. It'll be heavy, though. Do you think you can carry it?
Cyril smiled.
I'm stronger than I look.
Go on then. What are you waiting for?
Cyril looked at the untouched bottles of whiskey. Mr. Bates laughed.
I ain't forgotten your 30 shillings. Now, you listen to me. I'm trusting you, and you, lad, you need to trust me.
Cyril paused in thought and decided that after the events of last night, he could trust Mr. Bates. The snow was a good inch thick, and as he made his way towards the butcher's, he felt the wet soak into his shoes and sting his toes, but the thought of 30 shillings made him smile and walk even faster. The butcher's at the end of the main road was a double-fronted property. He slowly gazed at the turkeys, geese, and lumps of meat hanging from hooks displayed in the window, wondering who in Bermondsey could afford joints of meat that size. Once inside, he looked down at the sawdust littering the tiled floor and inhaled the smell of fresh meat. McNally's two sons, Ernest and Gerald, were huge men, but not as big as Malcolm McNally himself. Ernest was using a meat cleaver to chop through half a cow, and Gerald was stuffing meat into skins to make sausages. Cyril watched for a while, fascinated by the whole setup. He jumped when McNally said in a deep voice,
"What do you want?"
Cyril promptly pulled the note from his pocket, handed it to McNally and stepped back, intrigued by how the huge side of beef was being butchered.
"Oh, for fuck's sake!"
Ernest and Gerald stopped what they were doing and peered over their father's shoulder to read the note.
"I thought the man was dying," said Gerald.
His father spat back.
"Well, son, obviously he ain't gone yet. That's all I fucking need. Dad, how much do we owe him?"
McNally stared at the note and sighed.
"Half the bleeding shop."
"Are you kidding? We've been paying him for 2 years now and he said the debt would die when he does. I sent sausages a week ago and he looked like he was on his last legs then. He couldn't even breathe properly," said Ernest.
"Well, he's still alive and by the look of this list, he intends to stay that way. Fuck it. Just prepare this lot."
He turned to Cyril.
"What are you staring at?"
"I was wondering if you needed any help. I can work after school and at weekends."
McNally creased up his forehead as he peered closer.
"Ain't you Reggie Reardon's boy?"
Cyril nodded.
"Well, you can help by working off your old man's debt."
Ernest and Gerald laughed, which annoyed Cyril.
"His debt ain't my debt."
"You're a cheeky fucker, ain't ya?" growled McNally.
"I could say the same about you," retorted Cyril.
Before McNally could ease himself from the counter to clip the Reardon lad around the ear for his cheek, he stopped and thought about Mr. Bates. Mr. Bates wouldn't like it if he smacked his errand boy.
"You should watch your mouth."
Cyril stood silently and waited for the bags to be filled with meat. He wondered if in fact he could carry them, but then he thought about the 30 shillings. Come what may, he would get that meat back. McNally laughed when he handed Cyril the bags and saw how the weight instantly pulled the boy's shoulders down. Yet his amusement turned to intrigue when he saw how the scrawny-looking lad gripped the handles, straightened his shoulders, and marched with confident strides out through the door. By the time Cyril had reached Mr. Bates's back door, he'd stopped 4 times along the way. He couldn't feel his fingers, and his back ached as if it had been trampled on by a herd of elephants. Mr. Bates opened the back door and smiled, quickly relieving Cyril of his bags. When he took the first one, his eyes widened. It was so heavy that even he would have struggled to carry it, let alone 2 bags.
"Get inside, lad. Warm yourself up. I'll put this lot away in the fridge."
While Mr. Bates went into the kitchen, Cyril sat on the stool in front of the fire and rubbed his numb hands.
"Gerald thought you were dying, and Ernest mentioned something about the debt dying when you die, and his dad said they still owe you half the shop."
He didn't know why he told Mr. Bates that information, but he felt a kind of affiliation to the old geezer. Besides, he didn't like Mr. McNally.
"They told you that, did they?"
Still facing the roaring fire, Cyril called out,
"Yeah, Mr. McNally and his fat sons were talking about you as if you should be dead by now."
"The cheeky bastards. Yeah, they owe me a lot."
He stopped when he realised that he was having a conversation about his business with just a kid. Then he smiled to himself when he thought back to his younger days. He was probably just as direct and confident as Cyril. Yet there was one boy who was more upfront than him, and that was his old and best pal, Dylan Doherty, Cyril's grandfather and Peggy's father. It was so obvious that Cyril didn't take after his father, Reginald, because he was a proper idiot, but Dylan wasn't. In fact, Cyril was a lot like Dylan, not so much perhaps in his looks, but in his ways. Mr. Bates sighed, feeling guilty about the past.
"Listen, Cyril, you keep this business between me and you a secret, right?"
Looking away from the fire, Cyril frowned.
"Business, Mr. Bates?"
"Yes, son. You can run a few errands for me, but you keep them to yourself. I'll pay you a few shillings, but you keep your mouth shut."
Cyril beamed.
Yeah, of course I will. I only told you about what the McNallys said because I thought you should know.
Mr. Bates nodded and walked over to a large pot on the shelf to the left of the fireplace. He pulled the lid off and scooped out a handful of shillings. Cyril watched in amazement.
Quaw!
Mr. Bates counted out 30 shillings. There, that's yours. And before you go, look in the fridge. All the meat on the top shelf is for your mum. Best I keep it here, though. It'll go off otherwise.
Cyril's heart was beating fast with excitement. His mum would be over the moon. Quickly, he jumped up and headed to the kitchen and opened the fridge.
Blimey! Can I take some now?
Mr. Bates sat in his armchair, smiling.
Yeah, of course you can. And tell your mum not to worry about popping in any more. I'm up on me feet now. You, though, pop in after school tomorrow, right?
Cyril pulled 4 pork chops from the fridge and smiled.
Mum will do you a dinner and all for this lot.
Mr. Bates shook his head.
There's no need. I can cook me own. I enjoy cooking.
Cyril frowned. He'd never heard of a man cooking before, but he nodded politely and left. The feeling as he walked up the garden path was of relief and pride. As soon as he was inside, he placed the meat on the table and emptied his pockets of the shiny silver shillings. Peggy was sewing up a hole in her cardigan when she suddenly gasped,
"What in God's name?"
She jumped up from her seat and rushed over to the table.
"Oh, my word, Cyril, where did you get this lot from?"
"Mum, it's 30 shillings for the rent and whatever else."
Worry now dulled her excitement.
"Cyril, where did it come from?"
He flicked his eyes to the left.
"Mr. Bates gave it to me."
Suddenly, her face flushed red as she gripped his arms.
"Oh, my God! What did he do? Did he touch her? Did he hurt her?"
"No, Mum. What's the matter?"
"Well, why would he give you 30 shillings and..."
She looked at the open bag of meat.
"And all of this?"
"It's all right, Mum. I just went to the butcher's for him and fetched him his meat, and he said we could have all of the meat on the top shelf in his fridge."
"And what about the money?"
"Oh, bloody hell. Do you have to ask, Mum?"
"Enough of the language. And yes, Cyril, I have to ask."
Cyril sat awkwardly on the edge of the table and told her what had happened last night. He decided that there was no point in leaving out any details. Peggy listened intently, but a rush of sadness and guilt came over her. Her eldest son was running around the streets in the dark, looking for an opportunity to make a few shillings because he felt he needed to be the man of the house. He was mentally older than an 8-year-old. She knew that. But even so, he was only a lad still in primary school. Cyril peered up at his mother's face.
"Sorry, Mum. I was only trying to help."
"Oh, you daft beggar. There's no need to say sorry. It's my fault. I should be the one taking better care of us."
Her eyes were suddenly drawn to the shillings.
"Cyril, if I go out tonight, would you promise me you'll stay inside and look after Howie?"
Looking at the money, Cyril swallowed back the lump that was forming in his throat. He nodded as he looked down before sauntering away. History was repeating itself. His father had done exactly that. It was that same eager, excited expression whenever there were a few shillings in the pot. He would go out, using some excuse, and come back drunk. The cupboard would be empty, and the rent man would be banging at the door. Now his mother was about to do the same. At 8 p.m, after they'd sat down to a hearty and tasty meal, Cyril joined Howie in front of the fire to play a game of marbles. He couldn't even look at his mother when she said she was going off out. Instead, he sighed and said goodbye, staring at the glass balls that Howie was winning from him. He would have easily beaten Howie, but not this evening. He was heartbroken. As much as he loved his mother, he felt so disappointed that she would use the money to go out instead of paying off the rent or the Coleman or even filling the cupboards with food. By 10 p.m, he and Howie had climbed into bed, and within minutes, Howie was dead to the world. However, he couldn't sleep. He lay there with his arms folded in front of him while his eyes stared up to the ceiling. Trying to excuse his mother's want for a night out, he racked his brains to make sense of it all. He'd seen her crying after the rent man had belittled her, and he felt sad when she sighed into the empty cupboards. Turning on his side, He closed his watery eyes and hugged himself to sleep. It was 2 a.m. when Cyril heard the back door open. He would have gone back to sleep if he hadn't heard a heavy thud and then silence. Quickly, he sprang from his bed and hurried down the stairs to find his mother lying on the floor. His first thought was that she was drunk, just like his father used to get, legless. However, when he turned on the gaslight, he momentarily froze. His mother was bleeding from a gash at the side of her head. The blood covered her face, her neck, and her hands. Her jacket was ripped, and so was the top half of her dress. It was a Sunday best dress as well. With a dry mouth and his heart beating fast, Cyril rushed over to help his mother to the sofa, but as he lifted her arm, she didn't move. "Mum!" he cried, as he leaned closer to her face. "Mum!" His voice wavered in panic. "Mum! Wake up! Please, Mum!" Her stillness frightened the life out of him, and as much as he felt he was the man of the house, this situation was beyond his capability. "It's all right, Mum. I'll get help." He stepped over her lifeless body and leapfrogged over the fence. Without knocking, he opened Mr. Bates's back door to find him sliding his feet into a pair of slippers. Again, Mr. Bates was smartly dressed, even though it was so early.
"I heard you, Cyril. What's going on?"
Cyril was breathless with fear.
It's Mum. She's hurt bad. Please come."
He didn't wait for a reply, but rushed out of the house and jumped over the side fence again. To Cyril's great surprise, Mr. Bates was hot on his heels, having done the same. When they arrived inside the house to where Peggy was lying unconscious, Mr. Bates pulled Cyril aside so he could take over and tend to the situation. Relieved to have Mr. Bates with him, Cyril stepped back and watched him carefully scoop his mother up in his arms and gently lay her on the sofa. The gaslight showed every cut and bruise on Peggy's face, and the nasty deep claw mark just above her left breast. For her own dignity, Mr. Bates placed the torn part of her dress over her exposed breast and then checked a gash on the side of her head.
"Boil a kettle, lad. Do you have any towels or sheets I can clean her up?"
"Shall I run for the doctor?"
"No."
He then lowered his voice.
"Not just yet, boy. Get me some sheets first to clean her up."
Cyril rushed to the foot of the stairs but paused and turned back to see what Mr. Bates was doing. Then he heard him whisper into his mother's ear. The tone was harsh.
"Who the fuck did this to you, Peggy? Tell me."
With those words ringing in his ears, Cyril ran up the stairs. He'd not even contemplated that someone had hurt her. As he ripped open the cabinet doors at the end of his bed, he found a new clean bedsheet and quickly tucked it under his arm. He glanced at his brother gently snoring. It would take a bomb exploding outside to wake up Howie, he thought. Tearing back down the stairs, he placed the bedsheet on the floor by Mr. Bates and then hurried to the kitchen to put the kettle on.
"Cyril, go to my house. In the kitchen cabinet by the window, you'll find a bottle of brandy. And bring some sugar if you don't have any."
Cyril was just pleased that Mr. Bates was taking over and seemed to know what to do. Within what seemed like seconds, Cyril was back with a bag of sugar in one hand and a bottle of brandy in the other.
"Good lad. Now make a sweet tea and add a measure of the brandy. Bring over a bowl of warm water."
"She ain't going to die, is she?"
Mr. Bates shook his head.
"No, son, but she's hurt bad. So you just do as I tell you."
Cyril nodded, rooted to the spot. His eyes were like saucers.
"Well, go on, lad. Get the tea and the water."
With his hands trembling, Cyril poured the hot water into a teapot, put sugar and a generous helping of brandy into the cup, and then added the tea. He hurried over to Mr. Bates with the drink and then returned to the kitchen to pour the rest of the hot water into a plastic bucket. He didn't have a bowl. Once he'd topped up the bucket with cool water, he hurried back to Mr. Bates and watched him at work. Holding and supporting the back of Peggy's head, Mr. Bates put the sweet tea, laced with brandy, to her lips and allowed some warm liquid to go into her mouth. Slowly but surely, she sipped the tea and then her eyes flicked open.
"Take it easy, girl. Don't rush to get up or else you'll faint again."
Peggy rested her head back and took a few deep breaths.
"That's it, girl. You just rest while I get this cut cleaned up."
He turned to face Cyril.
"Lad, go upstairs and see if you can find a dressing gown or something for your mum."
Cyril frowned, but as young as he was, he assumed that Mr. Bates wanted a quiet word with his mum, and so he did as he was told. But again, he paused at the first step and listened.
"Peggy, Who did this? Give me a name, will you?
No, Mr. Bates. I don't know.
What were you doing?
I went to the Black Horse to play poker.
Alone, Peggy?
Well, yeah. I had Cyril's money and I wanted to make a few more shillings.
Easy, girl. Take another sip of this.
Cyril was still fixed to the spot. He had to hear the rest of the conversation.
Did you win?
Yeah, I did. I won £3. I was on my way back when I was bashed up.
Cyril felt his blood run cold with guilt. He'd assumed she'd gone off to get drunk, when all she tried to do was to go out to earn money for her family. However, he was surprised that she'd gone to play poker. He knew she owned a pack of cards, but he'd been oblivious to the fact that she could play. Intrigued, he stayed where he was on the step.
So did this attacker take your money then?
Yes, Mr. Bates. He ripped me best frock, as you can see. I should never have hidden the money down me top.
And you didn't see who it was? Asked Mr. Bates suspiciously.
I don't want no trouble. I'm on me own with two little ones, as you know.
Yeah, and I should have looked out for you more than I did, instead of wallowing in my own self-pity. Well, Peggy, you ain't on your own girl now.
Mr. Bates, I ain't no charity case.
Her voice trailed off into a whisper.
Peggy, I was supposed to look out for you. Your father asked me to keep an eye out when you moved back with that good-for-nothing husband of yours.
What? Why would me dad...
Cyril sensed his mother was getting tired. However, he really wanted to know himself.
Never mind all that. All you need to know is that your father and me were mates. Let's leave it at that for now. Now then, Peggy. Who robbed you?
Mr. Bates. Please. It doesn't matter. I was stupid to even think I could walk into a poker game and walk out with the winnings.
Are you telling me there was more than one fella who beat you up?
No. I thanked them all, put me money in a pouch and left the pub. I then stuffed the notes down me bra. When I got near the corner of our street, the next thing was I was thrown against the brick wall and tossed about like a rag doll. But listen, please leave it. I don't want attention drawn to me. I just want the incident left alone.
Who was it, Peggy?
Cyril strained to hear, but his mother was whispering, and so he never got to know who it was. However, what he did get to understand was that Mr. Bates was probably kind to him because he was friends with his grandfather. Once Peggy was cleaned up and in her dressing gown, she sat upright sipping her tea with less sugar and no brandy. Mr. Bates left her to it. He told her he needed to sort something out. Later that morning, Mr. Bates returned with a bag of meat to cook some breakfast, and he'd also brought with him some old comics he collected over the years. He sent the boys upstairs out of the way. Cyril could sense that the man had more to talk about with his mother. After an hour or so of flicking through the old comics, Cyril jumped up when he heard Mr. Bates call them down. Cyril and Howie found Mr. Bates in their kitchen cooking up a feast which amused them both. They'd never seen a grown man cooking before. He'd made bacon sandwiches all round. The fire was stoked and the room seemed less gloomy. Cyril felt in some ways relieved, as if his responsibility of being the man of the house was being relinquished, even if it was just for one day. Cyril sat next to his mother and leaned into her.
Are you all right, Mum? Do you need the quack?
She patted his hand.
No, I'm okay. I'm just a bit shaken up, is all.
He looked at the bandage around her head.
That looks more than a bit shaken up, Mum.
The head always bleeds a lot, but don't you go worrying about me. Mr. Bates has made sure that I'm okay. And son, you did good with your quick thinking.
You gave me a right fright, Mum. I thought you were dead.
He glanced down and noticed her bruised knuckles. He knew then that she must have put up a damn good fight.
It will take more than a bash on me noggin to finish me off.
Oi, son, don't go pestering your mother now. You skip along outside and get some fresh air in your lungs, and take Howie with you.
Cyril was about to have a go back, until he realised that Mr. Bates was merely helping out, and he was grateful. Outside, there was that kind of stillness in the air that only arises when it's been snowing. The snow was deep enough to make snowballs. Howie was rolling the snow, determined to build a snowman. But Cyril was uneasy. He couldn't help but worry about his mother and the fact that they were skint. He would have to find a way to earn a few bob. And his concern turned to anger at the idea of a grown man beating up his mother. He wandered around the garden with his hands in his trouser pockets, kicking the snow. He wished he was older and strong enough to bash the man up who'd hurt his mother. He imagined using a metal pole and smashing it around the man's head until he was unconscious and on the floor bleeding, like he'd seen his mother. A snowball hit him on the side of the head and pulled him instantly from his raging thoughts. He shot a cold, harsh look in the direction from where the snowball came to find two lads, one a good foot taller than him and another one the same size. They were laughing and ready to launch another snowball. If it had been any other day, Cyril would have laughed and engaged in a good snowball fight back. But not today.
"Throw another one and I'll black your eyes."
The lad, who was the same size as Cyril, dropped his there and then, but the taller boy, with the dark eyes, dark hair and hands like shovels, ignored Cyril's comment and launched a tightly compressed snowball that hit Cyril clean on the jaw and knocked him backwards.
"Black me eyes, would ya? I'd love to see you try, you scrawny little runt."
Almost foaming at the mouth, Cyril's eyes were red with anger.
"Scrawny? Bloody scrawny? Why, I'll flamey well knock you on your arse, you lanky piece of dog shit."
Howie stopped what he was doing and quickly stood by Cyril's side. He remained quiet, but that rosy countenance, along with its permanent grin, prevailed. The tall lad then glared menacingly at Cyril, but his friend seemed more worried about the crazed look on Howie's face.
"Reckon you'll knock me on me arse, yeah? I'd like to see you try."
The bigger lad was already flexing his fingers before holding them up ready to take a boxing stance. Cyril was taking deep breaths through his nostrils. As if the world had changed colour before his very eyes, he ran towards the gate, and without opening it, he jumped over and hurtled headfirst into the tall lad. Before anyone could say fight, Cyril began punching and swinging his arms, landing hard and fast jabs into the lad's ribs. So fast and furious was Cyril that the bigger lad was now pushed against a wall, fervently trying to stop the barrage of blows. It wasn't until Mr. Bates called out that Cyril, now breathless, stopped and stepped back. The true colours of the world he lived in came back. There before him was a lad doubled over, with bruised cheeks and blood dripping from the corners of his mouth. Howie was still grinning as if all this was normal. In contrast, Mr. Bates wasn't grinning. He pulled Cyril away.
"What on earth's going on?" he bellowed.
But as soon as the tall lad straightened up, Mr. Bates recognised him.
"Gaw, you must be Marsden's boy. If so, what are you doing in Bermondsey? Your father lives in Poplar."
"We..." he tried to catch his breath, but he was not prepared to risk taking his eyes off the lad who stood like a rabid dog, ready to have another go at him. He wiped the blood away from his mouth and then gave a look of spite.
"We moved into the road 2 days ago. They've condemned our house."
"What were you two fighting over, Cyril?" Mr. Bates asked, while still clutching him by the collar.
Cyril shook himself.